Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Tehillim podcast. Today we're going to take a look at Mizmor Kaf Gimel, probably one of the most beloved, certainly one of the most sung, of the Mizmorei Tehillim. A Mizmor that we probably most associate, although not exclusively, with the lilting songs that we sing towards the end of Shabbat as the sun is setting. And, you know, we might also associate it with the tasty foods that are set on the table before us as we're singing those songs. And as we'll see, that setting is perhaps very appropriate for the Mizmor. The song, or the Mizmor, is actually the story of a journey and an arrival at a destination. How so will become clear as we take a look at the Mizmor. The Mizmor can be easily broken up into two sections. The first section, starting, of course, with Pasuk Aleph, is a scene with a shepherd and a sheep. Mizmor leDavid, Adonai ro'i lo echsar. Right, the Meshorer describes himself as a sheep, and Hashem as the shepherd that leads him. And since Hashem is his shepherd, since Hashem is the one who is leading the way, right, lo echsar, right, I lack nothing, says the Mishorer, the sheep. Bin od deshe yarbitzeni, almei menuchot yinahaleni. Right, this loyal shepherd has the sheep lie down, right? Yarbitzeni, where the sheep would kind of like lie down to rest. Bineot deshe, neot being the plural of nava or nave, right? The word comes both in the masculine and the feminine forms. The place where you hang out with your sheep, if you're a shepherd. Sometimes in the sense of a pasture, right? But generally where you would go to for your sheep to graze. Interestingly, the place, although it certainly didn't have to exclusively be this way, the neot deshe, the place where you would bring your sheep, was often in Tanakh associated with the desert. Now that might not be an obvious connection for many of us, but in fact, although we tend to think of midbar, desert, as being barren, dry, a place lacking in water, in Tanakh, often these neot were actually found in the Midbar not only being desert, right, in the sense that we generally think of it, but open areas where you would have places for the sheep to graze. The famous Midrash on Moshe Rabbeinu, where it says that he took the sheep of Yitro achar ha-Midbar, right? Why was he dafka, bringing his sheep to the Midbar? So the famous Midrash says about him because he didn't want his sheep to be grazing in a place that might be owned by somebody else. So if you went out into the Midbar, you didn't have to worry about that. And in fact, that seems to be what was done often by shepherds. And there's a little bit of a, we don't have time to look at the psukim right now, but there's a little bit of a struggle that goes on between the land workers and the shepherds, right? Because the people who worked in agriculture didn't want the sheep grazing in their fields. And so the shepherds had to go elsewhere to find place for their sheep to graze, right? So the midbar and the neot deshe were often one and the same. And in fact, if you look in certain places in Tanakh, you have the term Neot Midbar, right? The pastures of the Midbar. So it could very well be that this shepherd is taking his sheep, right, in the Neot Deshe within the setting of a desert, right? It's not 100% clear from the Mizmor. The Mizmor doesn't mention the desert, but that could very well be what is being spoken about. And in fact, the fact that the Mishorer emphasizes the fact, bin odeshe yarbitzeni, he had me rest, lie down in neodeshe. The idea, it seems, being that we would rest in the places where we could graze so we wouldn't have to then tire ourselves out in order to find food after we would rest. Almei menuchot yinahaleni, right, the shepherd would bring the sheep to places of water that was moving, but was moving peacefully, right? And Mefarshim explained that this is the ideal type of water for sheep, because if the water rushes too quickly, then it's dangerous for the sheep, and the sheep can be swept away. And if it's, you know, water that stands still, but then it gets all green and yucky, and you don't want your sheep drinking from that either. Mei Menuchot being the ideal for the sheep, but the fact that the shepherd is worrying for the place to graze and the place of water, right, might be an indication that we're talking about a situation where these things were not found everywhere, and you had to go and make sure to be in the proper location to find both the food and the water for the sheep. Going on, nafshi yishovev, nefesh in Tanakh sometimes means the person, him or herself, right? The body, the self of the person, or it could be nefesh in the sense of a soul, right? That which makes the body, the person, come alive. Yishovev, right? It's actually a difficult word. Many of the classical mifrashim understand it in the sense of shuva, right? Like there's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, b'shuva uvenachat tivasheun, right? That your salvation, your victory will come b'shuva uvenachat, right? Through peace and tranquility, right? Through stillness, right? So that nafshi yishovev, right? There's something about the shepherd instilling a certain peace and quiet, a stillness for the sheep. In other words, the sheep was not in a traumatic situation ever, but always in a peaceful situation. Yancheni b'ma'agle tzedek. Ma'agle are darkei, right? The shepherd would lead the sheep b'ma'agle tzedek. Tzedek being, we generally translate the word as righteousness, but it's something that even-handedness, right? Even paths, right? Paths that are easy to walk on. So good a shepherd was this shepherd. Lema'an shemo. Right, so that seems to mean that this was done not so much for the sake of the sheep. I mean, yes, for the sake of the sheep, but not because of the sheep. Right, in other words, not because the sheep was deserving, the Mishorer is saying, but leman shemo, because of the shepherd. The shepherd is a good shepherd, not necessarily because the sheep is deserving of this tremendous care. Right, the nimshal, on whatever level you want to understand it, could be, is clear. Right, in other words, the shepherd goes above and beyond what the sheep deserves. Gam ki elech begeit salmavet. Sometimes the sheep says the paths are not so smooth, and the water is harder to find, and the grazing lands are not easy to come by. Right, gam ki elech begeit salmavet. Even when I'm walking in an overcast valley, right, some of the mefarshim say this is a metaphor for death, for the grave, for, right, all sorts of bad things, whatever it might be. Lo irara ki ata imadi, right? I will not fear evil. I will not feel something bad that could happen to me because you are with me, right? Many have pointed out, right, that the sudden switch from the third person to the second person. Before this, right, the shepherd is spoken about in the third person. Yarbitzeni, yinahaleni, yishovev, yancheni. Right, and then suddenly, when he's walking, begeit salmavet lo irara ki ata imedi, you are with me, so that the sheep here, the Mishorer, is expressing that the moments of most difficulty is when he feels closest to his shepherd. Shiftecha umishantecha, right? The shevet and the mishenet are the various types of sticks that the shepherd carries with him to guide the sheep, to sometimes give the sheep a gentle whack to keep it going in the proper direction, and of course for the shepherd himself to lean upon. Right, these are the things that comfort me when I'm walking b'geit salmavet. Right, those psukim, aleph through dalet, that's the scene, the setting of the shepherd with the sheep. Suddenly, there's a switch in pasuk hey to a different setting, to a different scene. Ta'aroch lefanai shulchan neged sorirai. Right, now we're seeing the Mishorer, the speaker, sitting at a table that is set by God, right? in the cartoon imagery that I would have of this mizmor, if you can imagine such a thing, right? Because of this sudden switch, right? You haven't quite lost the sheep yet, so you see a sheep sitting at a table, and you're like, "Oh wait, no, we're no longer with a sheep. Now we're having a different metaphor, a different image is being brought up here. The person is sitting at the table of God that Hashem has set for him, and at this table there's a sense of triumph, a sense of plenty and of luxury. First of all, the table is set neged tzorirai, right, against, as if it's against his enemies. We'll get back to that in a moment. Dishanta b'shemen roshi, right? There's a sense of plentifulness, of luxury almost, right? Being anointed by oil, right? That was a very luxurious thing to do. And you can even hear it in the alliteration of the words, Dishanta b'shemen roshi, right? Kosi revayam, my cup overflows, right? Plenty, right? There is nothing missing here. And this sense of plenty and being established, right, of having arrived somewhere is a statement against this person's enemies, right? He has arrived at his destination. They can no longer touch him, right? He is established at this table of Hashem. Hold on a moment. Achtov v'chesed yirdefuni kol yemechayai. Right, it should be that chesed, tov and chesed, goodness, and this kindness that I've received from God should chase me all the days of my life. V'shavti b'vet Hashem la'orach yamim. Right, and for many days, for the rest of my life, I should be able to sit in God's house. God's house can have many meanings here, but for the moment, let's say, right, as we see this metaphor of the person sitting at the table that Hashem has God, allow me to sit in this situation. Allow me to continue to be the person who is in God's house, who is God's ben bayit or bat bayit, let's say, for the rest of my life. This second section, right, Psukim, Hey, and Vav, is simultaneously parallel to the first section, right, the section of the shepherd and the sheep, as well as set in contrast to it, right? On the one hand, right, you have many parallels, right? Kosi revaya, the overflowing cup at the table that Hashem has set, right, is parallel to almei menochot yinahaleni, with a sense of plenty to drink, right, not having to worry where the drink is coming from. Ta'aroch lefanai shulchan, right, God has set this table before me, right? Hashem ro'i lo echsar, right? When Hashem is watching over me, I want for nothing. Neged sorirai, right? Somehow this table that Hashem has set that the Mishorer is sitting at, right, is somehow a sign to his enemies, right? Right, could you say is parallel to Gam ke'elech begeitzal mavet, right? Even when difficult things are upon me, right, Hashem is looking out for me. But on the other hand, right, this second section is the section in which the person has arrived, whereas the first section there is the feeling of the journey, going towards something, but not having reached it yet. The idea seems to be that even while I was baderech, right, even while I was still not yet at the place that I needed to reach, Hashem was with me and gave me what I needed so that I could reach my destination. And now that I have arrived, Hashem continues to do so. And the last pasuk, Achtov v'chesed yirdefuni kol yemei chayai v'shavti b'vet Hashem la'orech yamim, right, is the prayer that Hashem will always continue to do so. This sense of journey and arrival is reflected in the midrashim on this mizmor, and the parshanut which follows in line with these midrashim. According to some of the midrashim, right, the nimshal of what we read in this mizmor, is the story of Am Yisrael, Bnei Israel, leaving Egypt and traveling in the desert, when Hashem gave them everything that they needed. Right, the final destination being Eretz Yisrael, of course, but more specifically, right, Vishafti b'Beit Hashem, the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Right? That's one way that the Mizmor understands it. Another midrash, sorry, the midrash understands it. Another midrash sees this as talking about the path that Am Yisrael will take during the Geula of the future. Right? And there the midrash brings quotes from the book of Yechezkel, talking about the future Geula, right? Which also sees Am Yisrael as being compared to sheep, and also connections with water, you know, flowing water, etc. Talking about the future Geula, here the path is the path taken with God from Galut back to Eretz Yisrael, and the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash in the future. Other midrashim say that the Mashal is really about David. And let's not forget that this Mizmor begins, Mizmor le David. Right, so they connect it to David HaMelech himself, and saying that the first section talks about David running away from Shaul, right, when he was in a very touch and go situation where his life was in danger and he was constantly fearing for his life, and the second section is when he finally became king, right, Dishanta Bashem and Roshi, not only being a sign of plenty and luxury, but of anointment, right, that which was done to the kings, hinting to that part of David HaMelech's life. Some Mefarshim say, Ta'aroch lefanai shulchan, right, also being symbolic of the kingship, right, the king's table. And the last destination in the Mizmor, right, Vishafti bevet Hashem le'orech yamim, you know, the building of the Beit HaMikdash, right, in the literal sense, right, is also appropriate for David HaMelech, right, because that was a wish that David HaMelech had, right? He hoped that he would build the Beit HaMikdash, and although he didn't actually merit to build the Beit HaMikdash, if you look at the story in the book of Shmuel and the book of Divrei HaYamim, right, the fact that his son Shlomo was able to build the Mikdash, even what was seen as proof for David, right, even though David himself couldn't build it, the fact that his son could was proof that indeed he had been victorious over his enemies, right? That he and his kingdom had truly been established, right? He had arrived. So all of these stories are stories of a journey that is undertaken in order to get somewhere, right? Bnei Yisrael getting to the desert, through the desert to Eretz Yisrael. David through all his trials and tribulations with Shaul in order to become king. And although journeys are often fraught with difficulty, right, gam keelech begeit salmavet, the feeling is that without the journey, right, in each of these cases, that there was no way to reach the destination. There's a wonderful book by Noga HaRuveni. Right, Noga HaRuveni was the founder, right, a scholar, a biblical scholar, and of you know, Yediat Eretz Yisrael, knowledge of the land of Israel. And he was famously the founder of Neot Kedumim, which is the Biblical Nature Reserve in Israel, a wonderful place to go visit. And he has a book, Midbar V'ro'eh B'moreshet Yisrael, in English, Desert and Shepherd in Our Biblical Heritage, where he talks about, you know, well, exactly what the title implies, about deserts and shepherds in our biblical heritage. In this book, he talks about the nature, understanding what deserts and shepherds are all about in Tanakh specifically, right? How does Tanakh perceive them and how they relate to each other, right? What is the connection between deserts and shepherds? He talks a lot about the idea that I mentioned earlier about the desert specifically being the place where shepherds would go. He structures this book according to the psukim of our Mizmor, right? So in a certain sense, it's a kind of Perush on Mizmor Kaf Gimel. And each section of the book, he talks about the things that are relevant to, you know, obviously talking about all sorts of things, not only the things in this psukim, but somehow connecting it each time to the pasuk quoted at the beginning of the section from this Mizmor. One of the things that he discusses is that although the desert is a harsh, life-threatening place, it is also throughout Tanakh seen as the place of God's compassion, right? The place where God gave endless gifts to Israel, and where they learned to be a people, right? Now these are common ideas. The beauty of the book is how he backs them up with various psukim, right? How it was the place where without that place, right? The desert wasn't only the place where Bnei Israel were punished for 40 years. Right, but rather the place where they were transformed. Right, lechtecha charei b'midbar, b'eretz lo zru'ah, that the ability to transform Am Yisrael into a people who would walk after God could only have taken place in the desert. And he shows very convincingly that the danger of Eretz Yisrael, right, danger in quotation marks, as perceived by, you see this very much in Sefer Devarim and also in Nevi'im Achronim, was connected intrinsically of transforming the people from a nation of shepherds to a nation of land workers, right, an agricultural nation. And part of the threat was the threat of Avodah Zarah, and this threat was compounded by the fact that the people who are now going to enter Eretz Yisrael, they had always been shepherds, they had not worked the land, and they would be tempted to learn from the people who had lived in the land previously, right, the Ame Canaan, of how to be successful in agriculture, which of course back in those days was intrinsically connected to Avodah Zarah for those other nations, right? So because of this, right, redemption, and again, we don't have time to look at all the psukim, but throughout Nevi'im Achronim, redemption is seen in terms of being sent back into the desert, right? And only once they're purified back into the desert, many of the Nevi'im say, then they can come back to Eretz Yisrael and be an agricultural people again, free from idolatry. This reminds me of an idea that I once heard in a shiur by Aviva Zornberg. It was on Parshat Bahar, maybe it was Parshat Bechukotai, or maybe when they were together, where she talks about the idea of Shemitah, right? That Shemitah, when we let the land go without being worked for an entire year, and it's Shabbat LaHashem, right, is the year that we have to remember that all of the land really belongs to Hashem, right, and not to us, despite what our tendency is to think so while we're working it for the 6 other years. And so she says, interestingly, that basically what the Shnat Shemitah is sending us back into the desert, you know, Eretz Lo Zeru'ah, without actually sending us out to Galut. Right? It's a way of reliving the desert experience without actually having to leave home. Which is why, she said, right, in the Tochacha, in Parshat Bechukotai, the Galut is connected with Shemitah. You didn't keep Shemitah, the Tochacha says, I'm going to throw you out of the land so that the land will get its Shemitah. Right? By default, the land won't be worked because you won't be here to work it. Right? In other words, if you don't recreate the desert experience on your own, we're going to have to send you back out to the desert for real, right? Back out into Galut. Right? So, back to our Mizmor, the journey with the shepherd, right, according to whichever nimshal you want to understand it, was not just the means to the end. It was the end in some sense as well. What they learned along the way, right, whether it be an individual person, whether it be Am Yisrael, or whether it be David HaMelech, right, however you want to understand the Mizmor exactly, whatever it was they learned along the way in the first part of the Mizmor was key. It was critical in order to get where they had to go. The Malbim has a very interesting take on this Mizmor, right? He too understands the Mizmor as talking about David HaMelech. Interestingly, of all of the commentaries that I looked at, he's the only one who mentions that in connection with David, that David himself was a shepherd. Right? He had a very good understanding of what it meant to be out there shepherding your sheep. The Malbim takes an idea that we've seen in the Midrashim, but with a very interesting twist. He says that the Mizmor is David HaMelech speaking, longing for those days when he was walking with Hashem in the desert, right? Those difficult days, which were difficult, and yet they were the days when he felt closest to God, right? So learning from his own experience of a shepherd and kind of twisting that around where he becomes the sheep and Hashem becomes the shepherd, longing for those days. And that was an experience that he had to go through in order to get to the end, to become the king, right? The twist in the Malbim, though, is that he sees the end of the Mizmor as kind of ambivalent, right? Right, it's not clear. It's according to Malbim, the Achtov Chesed Yudefuni, that what is the Tov and the Chesed? Right, what are the things that this person wants? Right, Vishavti Bevet Hashem LaOrechamim. The Malbim understands this as, now that I have become king, David HaMelech says, please allow me, nevertheless, to continue to dwell Bevet Hashem, meaning becoming king, Right? And this is a very interesting read on the story of David HaMelech as we see it in the books of Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet. Becoming king, in a sense, was a trial for David. Right? He was no longer the simple shepherd who fought off the enemies of the sheep, you know, using his belief of God, as you see in Perek Yud Zayin of Shmuel Aleph. When you become king, the power, right? Power corrupts. The history has proven this. David is saying, "V'shavti b'beit Hashem la'orchemim," please let it be that I will continue to dwell in God's house. Not that my having arrived at being king is dwelling in God's house, but rather allow me to maintain some of that experience I had in the desert now that I have become king. Right? Don't let me lose that despite my having become king. So we see in the Malbim with its interesting twist a real understanding of the nature and the importance of that journey, the desert experience, that was necessary in order to get to the final destination. So perhaps now when we sing this song on Shabbat, particularly if we sing it at Suda Shlishit, right, we can be reminded of, you know, perhaps the trials and the tribulations of the week, of the journey of life, and at those last peaceful moments at the end of Shabbat, to appreciate V'shavti b'beit Hashem la'orech yamim, right? To maintain a little bit of the feeling that you have at that moment when you're singing this mizmor, you know, throughout, right, throughout the other days. Shabbat shalom, u'mivarach.